you remember when Moshe Rabbeinu told them they can't go into the land? There was a whole group of them that insisted, right? They cried, and then they insisted. And the next morning, they decided to start to climb and to go, and then they were killed by the Amalek and the Canaanim, it said. So they were killed. And the question that's asked is, why they waited till the next morning? If they were so excited to go, why didn't they just go immediately? So I saw a beautiful idea that the truth is that what was going through their mind and everybody's mind, and what was difficult for them to accept, is that up until then they were told that anything you do, if you make a mistake, you always have the option of doing tshuva, right? You do tshuva and then Hashem forgives you and wipes the slate clean and it all sounds wonderful. But when it came to the meraglim, as we saw, there was a little bit of a difference. Even the 13 attributes, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't use all of them, because the truth is that the sin was so deep. The way they cried, you know how they cried that night when they came back, and it tore at their whole insides. They were so affected by what they had done. They had so torn themselves away from Hashem and their trust that, yes, they could do tshuva, but it's a much longer process than just, I'm sorry, and now you can go into Eretz Yisrael. So what happened? They realized that, but they thought they have a different option. If Hashem is not just going to accept our tshuva at night, we know that Kabbalistically, mourning is chesed. It's a time of kindness and compassion. So they thought, well, wait till morning, and even though we don't deserve to go in, and Hashem really shouldn't forgive us, maybe, just maybe, we'll bank on the chesed of the morning and Hashem will forgive us. But it didn't work, as we know. And because they didn't follow instructions, Moshe said no, they should have accepted it, and they didn't. And then they were all killed. And remember, they were called the Ma'afilim, and we said that Ma'afilim, like they were the rebellers, but also it means like from Ayin Pei Lamed, is from darkness, because they were still in the darkness. They weren't following the instructions of Moshe Rabbeinu and accepting what Hashem had said. Okay, now we're moving on. And the next chapter is chapter 15, Perek Tezvav. So in front of you, you have just the Chumash. Like I said, we're not going to do all of it very detailed here. Just as an overall, the next chapter has, I think, basically three or four topics. The first one, in general, we call the Nesachim. Nesachim means libations, which means the pouring of the wine on the Mizbeach when you bring sacrifices. After that, it goes into the mitzvah of challah, which we'll do a little bit in depth, which is very beautiful. This is where we have the mitzvah of challah. And after that, there's a little bit about avodah zarah, about not serving idol worship. And then we come to a story, and Mirtz Hashem we're going to get to, and it's a fascinating story, very cryptic in the Chumash, is the story of what we title as the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the one who chopped the wood on Shabbos, which is a difficult story to know what really happened there, and we're going to get there, Mirtz Hashem, not today. But today we're going to look a little bit in depth, if you have a Chumash, but we have over here, I'm going to share a screen in a second, it's chapter 15, Perek Tesvav in Parsha Shlach. Okay, so we'll just read some of the Pesukim. Like I said, I'm not going to go too much in detail. It's a bit technical because it's the measurements of the, and these measurements don't even mean very much to us because it's a totally different way of measuring than we have. And we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. I just want to mute everybody. So it's, some of this is sort of, what the word is, it's not that it's not relevant. Everything's relevant spiritually, but we can't practically do this now until Mashiach will come, but it's all Torah. The mitzvah of challah, on the other hand, we do still do, even though it's not biblical now. Nevertheless, we still do it. That's why I'd like to do that one a little bit more, because that's a little more relevant. Okay, so let's see. Let's share the screen and we'll start. Like I said, and I'll try to answer. I'm not an expert on this at all by any means, so I'll just try my best and we'll see what we come through. Okay, so in chapter 15, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemar, Daber al bnei Yisrael v'amarta lehem, ki savayu el ha'eretz moshvei seichem. So fascinating. They've just done the sin of the Meraglim, right? They were just told that they're going to be in the desert for 40 years. Right away, the first instructions that Moshe Rabbeinu gives them is when you will come into the land. It's a long time away, 40 years away. Interesting, and they know that. Okay, what will happen when you get there? The land of your dwelling places, Asher ani naisei lachem, that I give you. And I just want to read a few of the Pesukim. We'll see some of the Rashis in a second. Vasisem ishel Hashem, Oila, oi zevach, lefale neder, oi binidava, oi bimayadechem, lasais reich nichayach la Hashem, min habakar, oi min hatzain. So he's talking about the different sacrifices. So we say like this, that, and you perform a fire offering, service to Hashem, either an oila offering, you know, the oila is the one that the whole thing goes up to Hashem, or a peace offering, which is called a carbon shlamim, that, you know, you share it between the kayin and the owner and the mizbeach, so some gets eaten by all. But and why do you do that? Why would you offer these things? By articulating a vow. Sometimes a person just makes a promise that they want to donate something to Hashem, or a free will offering, or on your festivals, right, on Yom Tov, if you bring karbanis, to produce a pleasing fragrance to Hashem from the cattle or from the flock. Okay, so these are the different options of karbanis that we bring. There are others that are not mentioned here, and it's actually quite specific, like karban chatas is not mentioned here, and we'll see, because karban chatas doesn't have the nesachim with it, but these karbanis do, and we'll see what nesachim are. So what does he say to do with these karbanis? The hikriv hamakriv karbanai l'Hashem. So the one who brings his offering to Hashem has to add two more things to it. First of all, he has to bring a mincha. Okay, so a mincha is a meal offering in addition to his offering. It's like an accompanying. What is the mincha? So let's not get confused. There is a carbon called a carbon mincha. Some poor people can't afford an animal. They can just take some flour and oil and make a meal offering on its own. We're not talking about that here. Here we're talking about with the animal accompanying it as well. It comes with this meal offering. Okay, so every animal, like all of this type, the shlamim and the carbon taida, has this with it. So what is it? It's a seiles isarein bolol berevia sahin shemen. So you take the flour and you have a tenth of an eifa. Okay, so these measurements, like I say, they're very biblical measurements. In a second, I'll look and see a little bit to get an idea. But it's fine flour mixed with a quarter of a hin of oil. And then what do you do with it? And then you say v'yayin up. That's one thing, and you're going to burn that. And the next thing that you're going to do is v'yayin lanesach. Then you're also going to bring wine. So you bring this flour, this fine flour and oil mixture. And in addition, you take wine, and the wine is for the pouring. You pour it on the mizbeach, and there's a special place that it goes down, like a special hole on the mizbeach that's made, and the wine goes down from there. Revi'is ha'hin, that's a quarter of a hin. Ta'ase al ha'ayla, ayla zevach, la keves ha'echad, and it gives you the amount per animal that you bring. The different animals have different amounts. Ayla ayil, or for the ram, ta'ase minchas seiles, shnei esreinim, that you put two tenths, lula b'shemen, which is mixed with oil, shlishes ha'hin, and how much oil, it's a third of a hin. V'yayin l'nesech, shlishes ha'hin, takriv reyach nichayach la'ashem, and a third of a hin of wine, for a libation shall you bring as a satisfying aroma for Hashem. Okay, I'm going to see in a minute, tell you maybe a drop what a isarin and a hin is, but I want to show you something interesting. What this words that come up constantly here, we've had it before when we talk about a korban, it's called an ishe reyach nichayach la'ashem, right? It's a pleasant aroma for Hashem. I just want to see, there was a nice little Rashi. Okay, you know, before we get to that, one important thing that Rashi tells us, I want to show you something, first Rashi. So that's on the first page. It says, when you will come. So he says, biser lahem. You know, when somebody wishes you good news, they say, besuras tovos. Like we say it in benching. Vayivaser lanu besuras tovos elio anavi. Like that's a word. Levaser is literally just means to give news, but it's used in a positive way. It's when it's good news. That's when you give a besura, a good news. Like Eliyahu will give us the good news that Mashiach is coming. So here Rashi says, what does Moshe Rabbeinu tell them? He brought them tidings, but it's good tidings. What is it? Sheyikansu la'aretz, that they will actually enter the land. Okay, keep that for a minute. I'll show you another mefarish. Because the question is, why now? Why now mention this, that they will not be able to do? So a very important thing to know is that this is only done when they enter Eretz Yisrael, even though they did bring sacrifices in the desert, but the desert sacrifices didn't have these extra components to it, didn't have, as we say, the nesachim, the wine libations, and it didn't have this mincha that you brought along with it. It was just the carbon itself. It's only when you enter Eretz Yisrael that you start to add that component to it. Okay, so just to see one more thing here. Look, he says beautifully in the next one. Okay, no, the, ah, he says, Ein zet tzivoy, this is not a commandment, ah, because he said like this interesting thing. Is he commanding us that you have to bring these sacrifices? Because look what the Pasuk said. The Pasuk said, when your heart desires. So is it a command that your heart has to desire to donate? No. So what interesting how the Pasuk is telling us is, when you will do this, then this becomes an obligation. So when you decide to bring a carbon because you have this feeling that you want to give to Hashem, then in addition to the actual carbon, you have to add these components as well. As you say, and what is it? It's a nachas ruach lefanai. When you say reyach nichayach as a pleasing fragrance, it means a source of contentment before me. It's actually very beautiful language, because when we think of giving nachas, you don't think of giving nachas to Hashem. You think of giving nachas to a grandparent, to a parent, to somebody, a teacher. But here you see that the carbon is an expression, as we say, of us showing that we give nachas to Hashem, because it means that we are setting aside and we acknowledge that Hashem is a source of all our blessings, and therefore we set aside and we give something back to Him. So this is the Yishei Reyech Nichayech LaHashem. I just want to see. Okay, so it says, as he says, you shall offer libations and a meal offering for each animal. And the meal offering is burnt entirely with the oil mixed within it. Okay, interesting. I want to just see if I can find somewhere the amount, because it doesn't mean so much to me, but I just want to see, because it's quite complicated amounts. I don't know if it says over here. Okay, so here it says like this, that 1/10 of an ephah is about 2.5 liters of fine flour mixed with 1/4 of a hin, which is about 1 liter of oil. Okay, it's a lot actually. And then it says like this, but if you bring a ram, as we said, then you're going to offer 2/10 of an ephah, so that's 4.8 liters, or and the oil is 1 1/3 liters of oil. So it's actually a lot of oil and a lot of flour that's mixed together and gone onto the Mizbeach with the carbon. I don't know, does it say the amount for the wine? Yeah, okay, so then he says, no, the next one was all the different, I'm just trying to see if it said any amount for the wine. I'm not sure of the amount for the wine, okay. But it's interesting that this has to be done by everybody, and it does detail even a convert and anybody who's going to bring a carbon will do this as the process. Okay, now I know on your sheets, what I want you to do, I feel bad, it's at the back of your booklet for a second. Go to the back of your booklet, and I want to show you something inside. But just one more interesting thing before we do inside is a fascinating thing that I saw of why are we getting this command specifically now? So this is a very interesting thing, that as we know, they've just done the sin of the Meraglim, and therefore they're going to be staying in the desert for 40 years. But what was the sin of the Meraglim? We know that they were very afraid of entering the land of Israel. They were afraid to engage with the material world and leave the spiritual, oasis in the desert that they had. What does the wine libation specifically symbolize? A fascinating thing. When you bring a carbon, which they did have in the desert, as we said, the carbon they had, but they didn't have the nisachim. A carbon means that you take something physical and you elevate it to become spiritual, right? You take the animal and now you put it on the mizbeach and it's consumed and it becomes a spiritual thing. Interestingly, the libations actually show a different way, because what you do with it is you take the wine and you pour it, it says down, into two pipes that led beneath the altar underground. So that shows a different thing. It's similar, but it's different. That's the idea that you infuse holiness into the mundane. So it's not necessarily that you take the mundane and you elevate it out and make it holy, like setting aside a day for Shabbos, right? Could be a normal day, now we're making it into Shabbos. Rather, we're taking some extra power, which is the mitzvah that Hashem gives us, and what we're doing is we're saying, Hashem, you have infused us with the ability to infuse our mundane activities with a purpose. So it means going about our regular Monday, doing our normal things, but at the same time being aware of who we are and what our purpose is, and thereby infusing everything with holiness. This is the opposite. It's both are very important. this is where they've had a little bit of trouble. This is what they were very worried and concerned about, because they were worried, and it's much harder. It's very hard on a Monday morning to remember to be infused with holiness. Much easier on a Friday night when you're dressed up, walking to shul, singing all the songs. Okay, fine, everything's wonderful. The food you eat becomes holy. But a Monday morning, much more challenging. And that's what the wine libations show, that we can even take the holiness, so to speak, and pour it down into the depths, into the most mundane, normal, sometimes not so good, parts of our life. And that's where they were struggling, but that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them, you will see, you will be able to do it. So this was the mitzvah of the libations given to them, and they would do it when they only when they actually enter the land of Israel. Okay, just to see, at the end of your booklets, the last two pages, not so hard, so just go to the last two pages. I'm going to show you some, just the second to last page, because there's a page that I copied some of Farshim. I'll show you when you come back to the other ones after. Okay, look at, see, it says the number 15, the second to last page, yeah? There's a 15 on the top, and there's a bit in English, actually. It's taken from a beautiful... no?
4, 5, and 6, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, is there? 15 on top. On top it says number 15. Oh, so there's more than... Yeah, beautiful. Excellent. Okay, so it says like this. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. So here it says a beautiful thing. This chapter presents the laws of the Nesach, the wine libations, we call them offerings, that were to accompany the sacrifices. And then, of course, then we'll see, as we said, we're going to go into the challah offerings from the ordinary bread that was baked every day. So the Ramban explains that, we're going to see it inside, it doesn't matter, since these precepts would be fulfilled after the Israelites entered the promised land, this chapter was given here as a consolation, it's a very important thing, and a reassurance to the people that despite their severe punishment, at least their children would enter the land of Israel. So it's a very interesting that you think it's a bit out of place, maybe give it to them at the end of the 40 years, but no, here is where they needed it the most, because they were very worried. And we'll see in a minute, the Rambam gives another detail to that, we'll see inside. But he says, with reference to this chapter, the Medrash teaches that the study of Torah is our only consolation in times of distress. When the nation was mourning their fate, Hashem told Moshe to console them by teaching them the Torah, which, as we know, these are all different halachas of Torah, as we say. Clearly, the laws of the Nesach and the challah offerings had a special significance in providing consolation. And he brings a beautiful pasuk from Shlomo HaMelech says, as we say in Koheles, go, eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a glad heart, for Hashem has already approved your deeds. What is he saying? It's interesting. So Shlomo HaMelech puts the challah first, the bread, and then the wine. But the truth is, in the Torah, we put it the other way around. But the Torah presents the laws of the Nesach first because they apply to the divine service of the altar, whereas challah applies to the ordinary daily bread. But the idea being that what you can do is that we should know that we can go with a happy heart. We can, even all the past that we're coming with, all the baggage that we're carrying, and we think Hashem is displeased with us, right? We've just rebelled on such a deep, hard level. Shlomo HaMelech tells us, no, you can still bring your wine and bring your challah, bring your bread and eat it and enjoy it with a glad heart. Hashem allows you to infuse your life with holiness, with godliness. It doesn't matter what you've done up until now. Okay, I want to show you something beautiful, how the Ramban says it. So he quoted some of the Ramban, but the Ramban has another important detail here. So he says, "Achar she'hivtiach es habanim she'yavoyu el ha'aretz," after he promised the children that they would enter the land, right? So remember, he said, men between 20 and 60, all going to die here in the desert. But the children, the ones who are under 20, they will enter the land of Israel. Hishlim lahem teres ha'karbanis, and then he finishes all the laws of the karbanis, she'akrivu, nesachim, bevayin laretz, that they should bring these libations that accompany the karbanis when they enter the land. V'ulay hoya za'ata, and maybe the reason that it's here now is l'nachamam, to comfort them, and this is an interesting thing, ula hafticham, and to promise them, to assure them. Why did they need extra assurance? Ki hayu noyashin lemar, because they were despairing, as we would all And what did they say? What's the logical thing, unfortunately, that a human being tends to say when they're in such a situation? Sometimes when things are a little bit gray, we say everything's black right away, right? So we tend to over, you know, even though it was bad, but we make it even worse. And what did they say? They said, Mi yodea, ma yeh la'irach yamin, l'seif arba'im shanin, shana, v'im yechtu gam habanim. Who knows what will happen at the end of 40 years? First of all, are we really going to enter? Second of all, if we're wandering in the desert for another 40 years, well, that means our children have so many more opportunities to sin. Well, then we'll never get into the land, right? Because if Hashem gets angry each time, well, then maybe our 10 generations from now, maybe, by some miracle. So that's why Hashem says, no, no, no. Oh, it's not going to be that way. I am telling you now, Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, because Hashem commands it. These are the mitzvahs that your children will keep when they enter the land. And the message underneath that is, no matter what your children do, they are entering the land. No, no problem. So it's a very fascinating idea. This is what the Ramban says. This is why it really flows the order of the story of the parashiyos. Okay, that's why v'lachin ra'a kadosh baruch hu nachamam. That's why Hashem decided, that's what Hashem saw, that he had to comfort them. Because when he commands them about all the mitzvahs that they will do in Eretz Yisrael, because that means he's assuring them that definitely in Hashem's eyes they are going to enter the land, they're going to inherit the land. In the desert, even though they brought sacrifices, they didn't bring libations. They didn't have to pour the wine. Only, there was only one exception, Levat B'tamid, only the carbon tamid, Shenem Rabbi V'nosach Revias Ahim, Yayim L'keves Ha'echad. That they did bring. But otherwise, when they brought a donation, a shlom, and whatever, they didn't. Kisham Nemar Pesach Ha'elmed L'fnei Hashem, Asher Yivoy L'cham Shama. Okay, it's because it says it clearly over there. And interesting, we say even the Nesiyim, remember when Parshas Nosa, when they brought all their different karbanas, they didn't bring Nesachim, we see there. And interesting, and also the interesting thing, when they were commanded to actually do it, is it as soon as they enter the land or after they divide and conquer? Chala, we have a fascinating thing with the mitzvah of Chala, it definitely becomes, you become obligated as soon as you enter the land, even before you conquer and divide the land of Israel, as soon as you start baking Chala in the land of Israel, because even though the flour might have grown elsewhere, right, think about it, you brought the flour in, but once you're in the land of Israel and most of the Jewish people are there, then you are obligated to do the mitzvah of challah, which we'll discuss soon. Okay. But interesting, it says that the meiser and truma, other ones, because challah is a truma, is one form of truma, but right, we give it to the kohen. But other meiser and truma is not done until they divide and conquer the land. It's quite interesting. Now, I wanted to just show you something interesting. The Sfarnu says, this is the last one on this topic, la'aseis reyach, hine ata egel haya karban reyach michayach, Bezulas min chasun esachem. Before the sin of the golden calf, every time they brought a korban, it was considered a pleasing offering to Hashem, a nachas to Hashem, even without the wine libations, even without the mincha that accompanied it. And we find it behevel ubenoyach ubeAvraham, like in, you know, our parashas, Avraham brought many sacrifices last week's parasha. He didn't accompany them with Nesachim. You don't find that. When did it start? And he says, oh, b'inyan v'ayishlach esnari b'nei Yisrael v'yalo oyleis v'yizbuchu zvochim shlomim la'ashem parim loizulase. But what happened? B'chetam b'egel, when they sinned at the golden calf, hitzrich mincha v'nesachim la'oylas ha'tamid shehu korban sibar. Then they became obligated to bring the Nesachim with the carbon tamid, which is called a communal carbon. But here something else changed, a big drastic change. Umeaz shechatu b'meraglim, but once they sinned by the sin of the meraglim, by the spies, hutzrach mincha u'nesachim, lahachshir gam carbon tamid, carbon yochid. Then every individual who brought just an individual carbon, a private carbon, he also had to bring a nesachim with it. And there's a very beautiful explanation, it's quite a deep one, that says that the egel, it's almost like corresponding to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. The egel, the sin of the golden calf, almost corresponds to the first Beis HaMikdash. You know, the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed for three cardinal sins, right? We say for idol worship, for murder, for immorality. And that's like the egel. The egel was all those things. It was real idol worship. It was partying and immorality was going on there. It was that type of thing. And that, it actually says that that was the source of, unfortunately, they didn't do complete tshuva, and then it led to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the sins at that time. We know what's the reason for the second Beis HaMikdash destruction. Sinas chinam. Do you remember we say they weren't getting along with each other? So interestingly, it's a very fascinating thing. The Shem Shmuel explains that perhaps that's why after the sin of the golden calf, they became obligated to bring only with a communal one. Because a communal carbon, it would help them. The libations would enhance it. But then afterwards, unfortunately, when they sinned by the Miraglim, which, what's the connection between not getting along and the Miraglim? Interesting thing. When you enter the land of Israel, we always say, it's a very fascinating thing. We always say we are one nation, Am Yisrael, and then we say we have one country, right? It's one nation, one Torah, and one country, right? Eretz Yisrael. So it all goes, the land of Israel serves, what's the main purpose is, to unite us as a people. It's only really in the lands of Israel that we are when most of the Jews live there, that we are united as a true community, as one in a real tangible way. Unfortunately, by the Chet HaMeraglim, that caused a blemish in the unity. And therefore, it was now they had to bring a libation even on their own private karbanis, because that was all that maybe that could be enhanced. But the communal one, they had rejected, right? They had rejected the idea of community. That's what it shows. They rejected the value of the fact that we have to be united. So now they have to enhance their private karbanis so that should be up to standard, at least that, and maybe that would help them. But then, Mirtz Hashem, the idea is really, the ultimate goal is that you should have it by both. That's when they enter the land of Israel. And when Mashiach will come and we'll have it all, and all the Jewish people will be living in the land of Israel, and we'll have the third Beis HaMikdash, and we'll be able to have ourselves complete both individually and communally. That's the hope. That's the dream. That's what we're working towards. Okay, but now we're going to move on to the next mitzvah. Okay, so this is the mitzvah of challah. Now, the mitzvah of challah has lots of parts, because there's just the technical mitzvah and the depth of what it means. And of course, there's the beautiful, it's not a halacha shir, so we'll just do a little bit of that, but it won't be this week because time moves on, but we'll see. A little bit we'll explore next week, but today we'll see a little bit of the mitzvah itself in the psukim that you have in front of you. Okay, so in your booklets, let's scroll back in a minute, what I'd like you to do is go to page 100 and, I know I made a few extra pages here, I see, because it goes on and on here about this. Okay, so page 178. It's on page 178, so let's see. And here it is Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17 in Perek Tezvav, in Perek 15. Okay, here we have the mitzvah. Okay, so now, because after we've done this mitzvah of the Nesachim, we have the mitzvah of Challah. So let's see what he says. Vayidabra Hashem al Moshe Leimar, Hashem speaks to Moshe, Dabra al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, V'yamarta aleihem, and tell them, Bivayachem el ha'aretz, when you come into the land. So you see, it's right away, when you enter the land, immediately. Asher ani mevi eschem shama, that I bring you there. What will happen? V'haya, ba'acholchem milechem ha'aretz, when you will eat of the bread of the land. Tarimu truma lahashem. So you see the word truma. What is truma? Truma is a donation. You shall set aside a portion for Hashem, right? When you're eating bread, you shall set aside a portion. It's not clear how it works. We know we take challah from the dough, right? Let's see. So let's continue. The pasuk gives a bit more specific. Reishis arisai seichem, the beginning of your kneadings. Arisai seichem means when you knead. This is on page 179. What is the beginning of your kneadings? Challah tarimu, You shall set aside a chala, a loaf they translate, as a truma, as a portion, kitrumas goyren, like the threshing floor portion. We'll see what that means, that's the amount. Kain tarimu oisa, so you shall set it aside. Okay, one more pasuk. Meireshis, from the first, right, from the beginning of your arisa seichen, of your kneadings, titnu lahashem, you shall give to God, truma ledairei seichen, a portion for your generations. This is the mitzvah of challah. These are the three psukim. The mitzvah of challah from the Torah is sourced from here. So just to clarify one important thing for us to know, biblically speaking, the mitzvah of challah takes place in the land of Israel, as we can see, when you enter the land. But not only in the land of Israel, but even nowadays, the big question, because it has to be the majority of the Jewish people living in the land of Israel. And we don't have that now. So when the majority of the Jewish people live in the land of Israel, then there is a biblical mitzvah to do the mitzvah of challah in the land of Israel. Nowadays, in the land of Israel, it is midrabanan. It is from the rabbis. Now, the question is for us out of the land of Israel, it could be midrabanan, or it could be not even that strict, but we all do it, and we'll see soon why. It is halacha, and we have to do it. It does, interestingly enough, the strictness of it affects, in other words, next week we'll see some interesting details about how it affects the halacha to know, why does it matter to know the source. If somebody forgets to take challah and only remembers on Shabbos, it's a problem, right? We know. What are you going to do? Can you eat that challah? Okay, so in Israel, I don't think you're allowed to eat the challah, but here you can take you can't set aside truma on Shabbos, but you can leave a piece over and then after Shabbos say, this is the challah. But we'll get to it next week to see more in detail. It's a little bit stricter, the halachas in Eretz Yisrael, than they are now. But one fascinating thing is, if you forget, and again, like I said, we'll do that more next week, but just a cute story that, well, it's not cute, it shouldn't happen to anybody. It happened to me once. So I made challah, and I didn't forget. I took a piece, and I made the bracha, and I set it aside. But I didn't put it aside well enough, and it got mixed in again into the dough. I couldn't find it afterwards. I didn't know what happened to my piece of challah. So now what happens? Challah is all baked. And I think that maybe the piece of challah that I separated is back and baked with all the rest of the challah. So can we use that challah? What do we do with it all? So fascinating thing that has to happen, and it was a little bit embarrassing, but it was quite an interesting thing. Because I had already taken challah, so it's not so simple. If I hadn't, it would be simpler. But because I had already taken, which means it's like an oath almost, right? You've promised, right? You've set aside a piece for the kayin. Now you've broken your promise. It became mixed in. So I had to have three people come, three men, and I had to be matir neder. That's what it's called. I had to annul my vow and then retake a piece of challah from the dough. And it was Friday, and I remember I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Actually, I have a feeling that I hadn't baked it yet, but it came back into the dough. I don't remember anymore. I can't remember when I realized, but then I was waiting for them to come so that I can actually put the challah in the oven. Anyways, it was a bit embarrassing, and I haven't forgotten since then, and I hope I don't, because now I take that. Oh, did it wrong? Yeah, it rose. That's it. I take the challah. I put it away, very far away, right away now. Shouldn't happen, but these are all interesting halachas that come up, and we'll see next week more detail. But let's just see a little bit more about the mitzvah first, how it says it here. So let's just a little bit into Rashi, see some nice mefarshim. Okay, here we are.
Sure. So if you buy challah, is it not right?
Arifa. No, of course you can buy challah. It's acceptable to buy challah. It's just that it's a mitzvah to do challah. So, in other words, if somebody's able to, then it's an opportunity to do a mitzvah. Do you understand? That's the thing. It's interesting.
If you're only making a small.
I know you can't even.
I know.
Then it's not. I mean, it's a nice thing, it smells nice, L'Kavod Shabbos, it has the mitzvah of L'Kavod Shabbos, but it doesn't have the mitzvah of challah. Yeah.
You mean if it's a small amount?
If it's a small amount, yeah. Because you have to have all seed, there's a certain amount.
Oh,
yeah. Yes, it has to be 2 kilos of flour. Yeah,
it makes. Can't take 2 kilos.
I know. Yeah, it's a prop. Oh, your machine. But I always need by hand. You can do it. No, it's not hard. No, no, really, it's not hard. I don't like washing machines. I'm so lazy, so I'd rather do it by hand. Everybody laughs at me. What? Yeah. You have to. That's part of. I hope so. Yes. That's part of what we rely on, that the kosher bakery does it. Yeah. It's interesting because it's this week's parsha. Parsha's Chayesara has the beauty. It's funny. I only realized this morning because one of the things it says when Yitzchak brought Rivka into the tent, that all the miracles that happened to Sarah took place again. And one of them was that there was a bracha in the bread, right? Which is the challah that she baked. It stayed fresh from one week to the next. And this is the concept of the elevation of the bread. It's a similar concept. And that's where we learn some of the mitzvahs that apply to women. And it's specifically the women that are given. Of course, people are busy. So now you're talking about the amount. So the amount is interesting. So what, I know, because sometimes now I'm also like, oh, it's only three of us. And what are we going to do with all the extra challah? So I give it away. I do. Because either I freeze it. And if you warm it up, it's very good. If I find as long as it's warmed up, it's fine. And if it's frozen right away, otherwise I give it away. And people like a fresh challah, you know, it's a nice thing. So it's a...
it's a way that little piece.
Oh, I know, that's the problem, the little piece. So either you burn it or you wrap it and it gets rotten and then you throw it away, you know.
It's got to get rotten.
I think so. Some people say, we'll see next week, yeah. Yeah, because it needs to, really it should be given to the Kayin, but the Kayin is not pure now, so he can't eat it even. So that's why. But you don't want to throw away a good piece of dough, so it has to sort of be like, yeah.
It depends if you've got a fire with
it. I 100%, Rona, you're right. You need to
have a combustion with a flame.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best way. But some people put it in the oven, if you wrap it, and then if you leave it long enough, it does burn in the oven as well. But it shouldn't be done at the same time the challah's in there. It's important to know. Yeah, it's yucky. I wouldn't want it yet. But some people burn it with the chametz. So keep it in the fridge and then they burn it with the chametz. But anyways, it's interesting, all different ways. Okay, let me just see if there is anything important. I mean, everything is important, but I want to see. Okay, so yeah, this Rashi says that you do the mitzvah of challah as soon as you enter the land of Israel. You don't wait until you've conquered and divided the land. I just want to see the next thing. From the first of your dough, okay, when you will need enough for your dough that you usually need in the wilderness, okay, so telling you the amounts, which we'll see soon. Oh, interesting that, strictly speaking from the Torah, there really isn't an amount, because you saw with the Nesachim, it gave all amounts in the Pasuk here, it doesn't say, because there really isn't, but the Chachamim have given us an amount, and the amount that the Chachamim give us, I'll just tell you the words of the Chachamim, which is doesn't mean anything to us, but it's one part out of 24, and for a baker, one part out of 48. Interesting that a baker has to give less than a person who is at home, a woman at home, who's just doing it privately. One of the main reasons for that makes sense because a baker is baking so much more bread. So if a baker gives one out of 40, and it's substantial already, the kohen's going to get something. But if we give such a little bit, it's going to be worth nothing. So that's why it makes sense that the baker should give less. Also, it's his business, and we don't want him to lose money. So therefore, it made the mitzvah a little bit easier in a sense. But we'll see next week a little bit more depth to that. Just want to see if there's anything else over here. Why... Okay, he says, oh, interesting, also it says, Miracious, from the beginning of your kneadings. What is from the beginning in Pasuk of Aleph? Because it means like this, it means you don't take, let's say, a person might think that they have to maybe make a few doughs, and then take the first one and give it to the Kayin. No, from the dough that you are making, you take off a piece first. That's we learn from the beginnings. And then when after you take off the piece, then you can do whatever you like with the rest of it, bake it, eat it, and enjoy it. Okay, so that's what we know. Let me just see. And as he says, interesting thing, titnu l'Hashem truma, you shall give a portion to Hashem. So he says, didn't we already say that in a sense? But the idea is because since the Torah doesn't give an amount, doesn't specify, so it wants us at least to be sure that we're giving an amount that's enough to be considered a gift. If it's so little that it's nothing, then what's the point? Even though now it does feel like a very small piece that we do take off, and it's true, because now we don't really do anything with it. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, if the Kohen would get a few pieces like that, it would be worth something for him, you know, something valuable. Okay, that's the end of the Chumash part. So I want to show you something. Now, remember the last page of your book that you have. Let's look at that for a minute, because that I want to do inside today, these Mefarshim. There's some beautiful lessons from the Mitzvah of Challah that I really want to get to. Today, more in a simple way, go to the back, last page. First, the Sefer HaChinuch, always beautiful. He gives us very nice insights. He says, Mishar Sheha Mitzvah. Lefi Sheha Yusai Shel Adam B'mizaynais. Since the life of a person comes from his bread, as we say, bread is what feeds us, even though nowadays it's other forms, but that's the technical basic staple of a person. V'rayv ha'olam yichyu balechem, and most of the world lives by bread. Ratza ha'makayim, so Hashem wanted l'zakayseinu to give us a merit, the mitzvah t'midis, with a constant mitzvah b'lachmeinu, with our bread. This is such a beautiful thing. Bread is something that we have all the time. Food, right? We're eating every day. Hashem wants to give us the merit that we should have a mitzvah that we could do constantly. And especially constantly meaning in our normal, mundane, as we said, activities that we do, making the bread for our home. Kadesha Tanuach, and also he says, and why? So that there should rest bracha bay, a blessing should rest upon it, al yedei ha-mitzvah, through the mitzvah, and we will receive a merit to our souls. So now, what have we done with this bread? It's not just simple, ordinary bread. Now, it's a beautiful line. This bread is mazayim laguf, it is sustenance for the body, and it is mazayim lanefesh, and it's sustenance for the soul. It's a very beautiful idea. This is what we're saying, Riva. No, of course we don't have to, but once in a while. I think the thing to do is decide once a year, twice. Some people do before Rosh Hashanah, some people do. It's a good thing. It's a beautiful, beautiful mitzvah. Some people do Darfkin Parsha Shlach, but whatever it is, maybe around your birthday, some special time of the year, a woman should do the mitzvah of challah, because it's such an opportunity, and it's not a hard mitzvah, really. I mean, hard. It takes a bit of time. You need an hour or two, but it's not a hard mitzvah. And flour, not so expensive yet, Baruch Hashem, so we can manage it.
Well, the time to make it right.
You're right, you do need the time. You're 100%, you have to leave it. What?
And you need your fingers not to have arthritis.
You're right. So you know what? Get the grandchildren to help you knead it. That's the best way to do it. I'm serious now. Bring the children in. They can knead it. You need help, and they'll do it.
You try to get a 24-year-old.
The younger ones are in England. Ay. But anyways, it's a good mitzvah, right. But I hear you. Okay.
My mother never made challah, she made bulkas.
Right.
Delicious. Bulkas, but you always went to the Standard Bakery to get the challah.
No, Baruch Hashem for the bakery, but it's a beautiful mitzvah. And then he says also, there's another additional benefit. So we don't have that benefit now, but this was the way it was in those times. Gam l'man yichyu bay misharsei Hashem. In order for the ones who serve God, for them to be able to live. Who are we talking about? The Kohen, that's who the challah is given to. So what do we say? Ha'oiskin tamid, because they are constantly involved, ba'avaydasai, in his service. Those are the Kohanim. Mibli yegia klal. What is unique about this gift, because the Kohen gets other gifts, is that this gift is given to them and they don't have to work. Because you give them already ready dough. It's not, you don't give them flour and oil and tell them to do the hard work, right? You do the hard work for them with the earth. They already get it all done. So it's so much, much amazing, he says. Because when you give them the truma from the wheat, okay, then they have to take it and they have to yeshlem amal, they have to work hard. Lehavir tatfua bichvara litchainai, so right, they have to take it, they have to grind it, and then they have to do everything else with it. But here, you're giving them ready. It's an amazing gift. Aval kan yavei chukam lahem meblitzar shel klum, without any pain. So it does call it pain, you see? So there is some pain involved. But anyways, without any pain, without anything, you give it to the kohen. The point is that this is an incredible mitzvah, as you can see from the Sefer HaChinuch.
Give us the recipe now.
Next week. Yes, I use it always, and it's the easiest recipe. Do you have the one? The one we. It's an easy recipe, really. Okay. Nothing is. It works beautifully.
You have to tell us how much to put aside. You have to give all these.
Okay, and Mirza Hashem, next week we'll do the practical side a little more, besides the insight. But let's see over here what the Svarnu says. He says challah. Sure, Sylvia. So that's a very good question. She could, because she could get wheat. Remember, some of the truma is actually wheat. So if she bakes her own, then I think she would also have to. That's very good. I wonder if she has to take off challah. I'm not sure. But then they would also get this challah, so they would have both. It's an interesting question. But they do get wheat. They do. So they must make something. Yeah, it's an interesting. So now it's only a little piece. Very small piece. I know. It's a very small piece. Yeah. It's not big at all. Okay, challah. So now the Sforno says, interesting, after the sin of the Meraglim, again, why is this connected? It's Rechkama challah. We also needed this mitzvah of challah. Why? L'man yiyu re'uyim she'tochel bracha b'batayim. So that they should be worthy, that blessing should actually rest in their house. You see, interesting, it's a beautiful thing, but on the flip side, it shows that we need extra bracha. And why do you need extra bracha? Sometimes we need extra bracha when we're a little bit, you know, not so amazing, as we say. So we've tainted ourselves a little bit with the sin of the Meraglim, which showed, and we'll see next week a connection specifically, showed a lack of bitachon, a lack of trust. So we do the mitzvah of challah, and that helps us to bring in the bracha into the house. And that's what he says, Reishis Arisai Seichem, the beginning, the first of your dough, Titnu Lakayin, you give it to the Kayin, Lahaniach Bracha El Beisecha, to bring bracha to your household. It's a beautiful thing. That's what it says specifically in the Navi. V'chein el yo amar v'aytzeisali misham uga ketana ki kai amar Hashem kad hakemach loy sechala. Right, that's what he said to that lady who didn't have food. He says, it won't end, right? The kad hakemach, it won't end. And Elio was a kohen, and she gave him a little bit of challah. Anyways, it's a special mitzvah that brings special, special bracha. I wanted to show you one more nice thing from the Rabbeinu Bechai. He says like this, mitzvah challah, eina, as we said in the Haggis Bamidbar, it wasn't done in the desert. Obviously, they only got the mun in the desert. They didn't bake challah, but afterwards, when they entered the land, aval mischaivu miyad, b'chnisasam laretz, as soon as they entered into the land of Israel, why does it say from the bread of the land? It has to say Cain. In the desert, they were eating bread from the heavens. So here it specifies bread from the ground. That's the difference. That's where you need challah. Shahayu Kaddish, which was holy in the desert. As soon as they enter the land, and they'll eat from the bread of the land, so that you can sanctify it, the mitzvah, with this mitzvah, this is the mitzvah of challah, and that's why it specifically says, an interesting wording, that you take this portion and you set it aside for God, even though, who do you give it to? You give it to the kohen. Interesting. The reason why it says that is because when we set aside this little piece, we are sanctifying all of our bread. So it is a godly presence, and it brings godliness back to us, into our bread, into our home. U'mitzvah min ha-teira l'hafrish challah min ha-itza, as we said, it's actually a biblical mitzvah to do the mitzvah of challah. Shenem ha-reishis ha-reishis ha-seichem challah terim, as he says, quoting from this pasuk, v'ha-mafrish, and the one who separates, and we'll do this more next week, but just interesting to see how the Rabbeinu Bechai says, you know, we have to make a bracha, asher kedishanu b'mitzvah, right, that he commanded us, v'tzivanu l'hafrish challah, and commanded us to separate challah. Bein ba'aret, and some people say min ha'isa, from the dough, some people don't. Different nusachs, whichever one is good. Bein ba'aret, bein b'chutz la'aret, whether you're in the land, whether you're out of the land. Ikur mitzvahs chalim in atayra eina el of Eretz, but we know the main mitzvah is only in Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar v'hoyu b'chalcha milechem Eretz, it says clearly when you will be eating from the bread of the land. U'bishman shekol Yisrael shom, at the time when the entire Jewish nation are found there, shenemar b'vay achem, when you will all come. B'vias kulchem, amarti. V'loy b'vias mitzaschem. It's when you all come, not when only a part of you, which is what we have now, where only a part of the Jewish people live in the land of Israel. Even in the time of Ezra, which means when they returned to the land in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, a lot of the Jews, you know, they stayed behind in Babylonia and Persia. Life was too good for them, like it is now. So they didn't leave. And therefore, even then, it wasn't a biblical mitzvah already. As we say, so that's why Eina Ela Medivrei Sefer is only rabbinic. Now he says a beautiful line. I want to tell you something. This is a very powerful thing. I think this is also important, as we say, for tradition. He says, Ma sha'uma, sha'anu mafrishin chala, b'chutz la'aretz, and this that we separate chala out of Eretz Yisrael, achshav now, Medivrei Sefer, it's from the, it's rabbinic, b'chutz la'aretz, achshav, sorry, hu kedei, shalai tishtakach, Tairas Chalom Yisrael, so that the mitzvah of challah should not be forgotten from the Jewish people. That's the problem with the bakery, I have to say. The only problem with the bakery is that people don't know there's such a mitzvah of challah because they never saw it. You go to the bakery, you buy the challah, you bring it home, and nobody knows that what they think that's what challah is. Challah is the mitzvah of separating. If you never do it, nobody knows that there's such a thing. And the idea of us doing it out of Eretz Yisrael is only that it shouldn't be forgotten, because please God, soon we'll all be together in the land of Israel and we will do the mitzvah in the proper way. But the idea being, again, doesn't mean every single week, but once in a while it is a beautiful thing to do if a person can, or a person can even do it with somebody. Just, it's a beautiful mitzvah. So when a person has an opportunity, it definitely is a valuable thing to do. And as we say that there is no measurement from the Torah, as long as you've even done it, if from the Torah strictly speaking, even if you've taken as like a little, like a seed of like a grain of barley, he's already redeemed the whole dough. But we know that the rabbis have yes given us an amount, either 1/24th from the dough to give it to the kohen, or as we say 1/48th if you're a baker. Okay, so we're going to stop over here today, and then next week in Meretz Hashem we're going to see more beautiful insights, but I'll also bring more clear halacha and a nice recipe also, okay? But it's a beautiful mitzvah.